Nicole for getting our picture, Sarah from Santa Barbara, or Galita, I understand.
Hi, I'm Sarah and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sarah.
I want to first just thank Allison for coming up with me. I've had a really good time getting to know her over, I guess it's a year and a half or so. And Nancy, thanks for coming tonight. I've gotten to know her through my job. It's been really cool. I spotted her right away and I was like, I think she might be one of us. And it's good to see you, Billy. I met Billy at my sponsor's house where she has a meeting on Monday nights. And we've sat in a few meetings together, so that's cool. I like to start off reading a paragraph out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our textbook of recovery. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. I also want to welcome the newcomers that identified tonight. Thank you, Kristen, for asking me to come speak. It's always a privilege, you know, to get to share. I came into the rooms for the first time when I was 14 years old. I had started drinking, I think, probably my early 14s and and mid-14s. I was going to an AA meeting, AA meetings with a friend of mine who, she had, there was a place called the Care Unit down in Santa Barbara at the cottage, the Glead Valley Cottage Hospital, that's what it is today, and it was an inpatient program, and she was my age, and so I would go in there and visit her. And I already had like a fascination with alcoholics, and I knew of the program of AA because I seen it on TV. There was a movie, an after school special, I think it was, called Sarah, Portrait of a Teenage Alcoholic. And I just was like, wow, that's so cool, you know, like, because I was doing that. I was already drinking in the room by myself and bringing alcohol to school and had already, you know, gotten in trouble. And I think I always had this like kind of attraction towards people who drank and used and wanted to be, you know, part of the motorcycle gang or the gangbanger gang or, you know, whatever, the hippies. I mean, I just was like, they're doing stuff that I think I want to be doing. And I didn't really know what, but so I came into the rooms and I totally identified with the things I heard being shared here. I hadn't really hit a bottom yet, but I had already experienced some of that demoralization, shame, guilt. I knew that what I was doing was different, and I found a little journal maybe about a year ago. I found it and it had like the days I'd been sober and other little things that were going on in my teenage life, and it was just kind of funny because I did want to start coming to meetings, and I did not want to get a sponsor, and I did not think one of the things that totally freaked me out was the God thing, because I was raised in a home, there was no religion, it was kind of like the scientific theory, and I thought people that believed in God were just ridiculous. I thought it was naive and stupid to believe in something that you could not see or prove. And so that I didn't really hear the whole like phrase of, you know, God, we understand him, that it could be whatever I wanted it to be. It just was a power greater than myself. And I remember sitting my parents down and telling them, you know, I think I'm an alcoholic. And they kind of, I don't think they laughed, but like, you know, what are you talking about? Because my mom kind of lived in denial, I would say, and I wanted to start coming to these meetings all the time, and I knew that's part of what it took, but, you know, they didn't really want me hanging out with you guys. I could see why. At 14, but they used to smoke cigarettes in the rooms back then, and so I had a really good reason to smell like smoke when I came home. And anyway, it was just a lot of stupid little things. But prior to that, I had, just a quick glimpse of when I first started drinking and using is I had snuck out of the house one night. I had two of my friends were staying over, and some guy that was driving, which was huge when I was in eighth grade to hang out with somebody that was driving, invited us to go out to Haskell's Beach for a bonfire. And this was like dreams coming true, you know? And and so we snuck out of the house because this was going to happen. I was going to make it happen because I make things happen in my life. And I fell asleep. Nothing really went the way I wanted it to that night, which meant the boy, I thought, whatever, you know, it just didn't happen that way. So I fell asleep next to the bonfire. And when I got up, I rolled over to get up, and I stuck my knee in the hot coals. And it was there for a minute because I don't realize that I've put my knee in the hot fire until a few minutes later. And, you know, my first thing was I got to cover this up, not go get in the ocean, which would have been the smart thing to do. I'm like, get up. We got to get home. You need to bring this home right now. And so get back home. And my friends sneak back through the window, and they come let me in the front door. I go build a fire in the fireplace. And light the fire, and then I go upstairs to my mom's. And, Mom, I burned my knee in the fire. And it was so funny because she had just blew the pilot light out on our heater the night before. And so she was like, oh, yeah, it must have been cold in the house. And she thought it was funny when the emergency room doctor said there was sand in my knee. But and it all came out like a week or so later. You know, the kids were talking and stuff. And they found out dates that I'd been taking acid, who I was hanging out with, where I was hanging out. There was quite a chain of communication going on behind our backs. And so my parents weren't real thrilled to hear about that. But it was kind of like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I'm just experimenting and that kind of thing, a little slap on the wrist. And so, you know, I had tried this program. I didn't want to get a sponsor. And I just kind of stopped coming, and I had just started drinking, so I probably really wasn't ready to get sober, though. I kind of wonder, there was another kid there that was 16, and he stayed sober. So, whatever, it wasn't my path. So I went along and, you know, ended up in a lot of bad relationships, and I would jump from one relationship to the other, and I would jump from different substances. I always drank throughout... throughout the next 17 years, I drank. And I would sometimes, I think at some point I quit drinking beer because I was spending too much time in the bathroom. And, you know, just it's just not as quick. And I also did a lot of outside issues and would go on, you know, years, you know, several years in a row of doing this or that. And when I was 21 years old, I got pregnant. And I had been doing some stuff before that, and I'd been doing it for a few years, and I was really tired. And so when I found out I was pregnant, you know, I just basically slept for a long time and ate and slept and moved back home with Mom. And I think I did go out drinking a few times. When I had that child, I was a completely dry drunk. I mean, I was so uncomfortable carrying this baby around with me. Like, I didn't want people to see me parenting because I was so worried of what you thought of me, like what, how I changed the diaper, how I did this, you know, because, and I was started having panic attacks and, you know, and because I didn't have my solution. And, but I, you know, it was pretty quick that I was, you know, anytime I could, I was leaving my son with my mom. And going out to the bar, and I'd have like a curfew at like 11 or something. It was like, I'd be so angry about that, you know. I just did not embrace the responsibilities that came along with being a mom. I loved him dearly. I still do to this day. Today he's 22 years old. And so he's about 4, and I've, you know, I start dating people again, and His dad and I had a fairly strong connection, but he moved. And so I was just, you know, raising him on my own. And so he's about 4 years old. I had gotten engaged, gotten pregnant, in that order, to my second son's father. And at that point of my life, I was not able to, I didn't have any control. There's a portion of our book that talks about, you know, when we have really good reason to stop and we can't, even when I don't want to be doing it, I couldn't stop. And that was the case. And it was, I believe I hit a lot of bottoms while I was out there, but it was only my last bottom when I surrendered that was different. And so I was riding along the bottom, and I experienced a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. And I part of me wanted someone to, like, I wanted to get help, but the selfish, self-centered, you know, diseased person didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you because then you would know, and I wouldn't be able to keep doing it whenever I was ready to keep doing it. And I was so embarrassed of it, because you hear people to this day, you know, talking about people like me, and it's nothing good. There's nothing good said about someone who's pregnant and putting stuff in their body. And that was a really, really tough time for me. And it's a really, really good example of what this disease is about, because it took away every natural instinct I have inside of me to be a mother, to be the kind of mother I knew I should be. And we ended up moving about a year after he was born, and still really heavy into the stuff we were doing. And of course, you know, if we move, I knew that we would just be kind of switching chemicals, and I was happy because we had been doing coke and smoking it, which is really, it's a very time consuming habit, and it's not easy when you have a young child or two of them. And so we moved because we realized we cannot stop doing this unless we get away from it. And so I started doing meth, and the whole time I'm drinking, I've always got alcohol. And I really started drinking when I moved. We moved to Fresno. I started drinking every day, and I was able to stay at home with the kids. You know, so part of me thinks I'm, like, doing the right thing. You know, I'm doing arts and crafts with them, and bringing them to and from school, a lot of times late. And I think when I'm feeling so sick that I can't get up and bring them to school, that they're lucky. Like, man, I wish my parents, like, you know, that I would just get a day off because my mom didn't want to get up. I mean, that's how I would rationalize things. And my older son had to take on a lot of responsibility that was not his to take on, because I would pass out during the day. A couple years into that, marriage was falling apart. I'm spending money. I think, you know, we were about to, I was, like, laundering money through our accounts and stuff. You know, I'd write checks for tons over what they were at the grocery store, so you couldn't tell, you know, like, what that I was getting a bunch of cash back. And and we ended up filing bankruptcy, and I totally blamed it on the fact that our cars were breaking down all the time. So towards the end, you know, the day looked like me staying up usually till 3 or 4 in the morning, because I wasn't staying up for days on end at this point. I'm just trying to maintain, you know, I'm just maintaining. And I'd get up in the morning, usually right before the older son had to be to school, and barely get him off, and babysitting two children, one my older son's age, one my younger son's age. So I'd come back with the two little kids, and I would pass out, turn on Sesame Street, and I would pass out for probably a couple hours. And I thought I had that, like, mommy eye and ear. But I think my mom said she came to visit once, and, you know, that she opened the door and came in, and I was not waking up. You know, I don't remember that, but And I knew what I was doing, you know, while all this is happening, like there's just holes inside of me that are just becoming like gaping, you know, and I'm just becoming more and more ugly inside and outside. And then I would get up and I would start drinking, and I would drink the whole rest of the day. I would drink at the parent-teacher conference. I would drink in the car. I would, Nancy and I shared this little common thought. And I had alcohol with me wherever I went. And I had a little part-time job during that period at Dish Network or something. And I would bring my, you know, big old cup, and it was like vodka and a little splash of something. And I remember my boss told somebody else that I was an alcoholic. And I was like so offended, you know. Like, how dare he call me an alcoholic? Anyway. And I remember going to an AA meeting up in Fresno after, and I remember thinking, I just want to like cut down a little. And I knew this was not a program about cutting down or harm reduction or something like that. But that's how like delusional I was, I think, at the time. I just wanted to kind of get things under control, because at this point, I couldn't get things under control anymore. I used to, at some point in my disease, be able to, though I think I crossed the, like the alcoholic line at some point. I think the real alcoholic, you know, was a little bit later. And because I remember controlling the amount I would drink on occasion. You know, I remember drinking a lot at the beach, and I would get so drunk so early in the day. And I asked my husband, I was like, I hate being so drunk at like 6 or whatever, and or 4. And he's like, just slow down a little. And I was like, oh my God, that's a good idea. But I don't like doing anything slow. You know, I just don't. I want it in me. And so I ended up, I left my husband, and it was totally unexpected. I ended up moving back to Santa Barbara, and I'd sold my car to the drug dealer. I was not working. I had no job, was filing bankruptcy, left my husband, and I'm back at my mom's with my bottle. And I remember getting offended that my husband would bring like an open container in the car, and I knew you weren't supposed to drive with an open bottle even like in the car anywhere. And I've got my open bottle in the car with my mom, and you know, she wasn't okay with that, and I don't know why she kind of allowed it or whatever, but and I hit a bottom, and I wasn't expecting, you know, I wasn't like, oh, I need to get help. You know, I remember I went to a counselor because there had been some domestic issue, and so I was getting free counseling, and I said, you know, I'm about to run out of my drugs, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I ended up, I ran out. I slept for about 4 days. I got up. I went out to the bar, and I drank really heavily. And I came home. I'm laying in bed. My mom was just finishing putting the boys down. And they were 7 and 3 years old at the time. And I'm a wreck. I'm just a total wreck. And I lay down in the bed, and I want to die. You know, I can't do this anymore, and I don't know how to live. And so my mom was just about to walk up to her bedroom upstairs, and I said, Mom, I'm going to kill myself. And she just barely heard me and came back to the room. And we ended up sitting up that night all night talking, and the following Monday, that was not my last night of drinking. I had no idea how physically, you know, I was detoxing from the alcohol. Like I'd never experienced that feeling, I think, because I always had the alcohol in me. And so I drank on Sunday, and that was like probably the best couple drinks I had. And then I went into Project Recovery in Santa Barbara on Monday. And when I walked in there, I had what is sometimes referred to as a moment of clarity. You know, I walked in there, and I didn't know how, but I suddenly saw that I'm not ever going to drink and use again. Like, I don't ever have to. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I know that the 12 steps have a solution, and I don't know how they do it, but I'm going to do it because it works. And so I started in Project Recovery. I started going to meetings. A few months later, I moved into Casa Serena, which is a residential treatment program in Santa Barbara, because my mom kind of thought, since I stopped, I should just be able to be done. Just don't drink. And I knew intuitively, like deep inside me, that this was like, you need to give this your all now and build that foundation that they talk about. I got a sponsor when I was 30 days sober, and I started doing the steps. I was going to meetings. I got commitments. I moved into Casa Serena, and the first year of my sobriety was, I mean, it sucked. I often felt suicidal because I didn't know how to live without drinking and using. And suddenly I have these like responsibilities that are coming back on me, like getting a job. Never had trouble getting a job before, but I guess going to job interviews and crying isn't probably the way to do it. I started working, and I was just terrified. I was swimming in fear. Like, how am I going to get the kids to school? How am I going to get a job? Like, and then I'm going to have to move out of this place someday, and I don't think I can do it. That was really the underlying thing, is I can't do this. And I didn't understand. I complicated everything. Like, surrender, I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know what my will was or God's will. I didn't really... I mean, I'd heard of willpower, but I didn't understand what that meant. And I didn't understand in our first step that our lives had become unmanageable. So I thought, since I quit drinking, that my life was manageable now. And that's what I did for a while in this program, as I was trying to manage and control things. I did not understand that second and third step and how to like do that, how to apply it. Though I was being told by people in my life, just do the next right thing. Just suit up and show up. And so I would do those things. I would suit up and show up, but I would be really in a lot of anxiety and fear about, like, well, what's the next right thing? Am I supposed to do this or am I supposed to do that? I got to know what God's will is for me, or else how am I going to do it? You know, and that's a really, really uncomfortable place to be in, because I'm never going to know what God's will is until it's happening. I did finally, after quite some time, I realized that, you know, there's probably three different ways sometimes, or several different veins that I could kind of travel down, whether it be choosing to go back to school or choosing this job or that job, that I would end up where I'm supposed to be. But if I decide to just sit on my ass on the couch and watch TV, that's probably not God's will. And I can feel it in here now because I'm sober. And so I kind of started to get that. And I'm still going to meetings. I decided the first time I ever really heard God talking to me and like pushing me to do something was when I was a couple years sober. I'd been working in this office and hearing all these people talking like, you know, they were educated. And I was like, man, I think I want to learn. I want to learn. I wanted to become educated. And never had any desire to go to school. I was... My parents weren't stupid at all. They're not stupid. They're pretty smart people, but that neither of them had an education. And so I looked into City College, and that was terrifying for me to think about going back to school, to having to complete one class, just registering was scary to me. And it meant I was going to have to quit my job, apply for financial aid. I didn't know what that look like or how I would live, and I did it. I just started doing it because I felt like that's what you're supposed to do. And you know, it was really cool because I was terrified, so I studied my ass off because I was really afraid I was going to fail. And then I got these A's my first semester, and I was like, oh my God, you know, I'd never seen that in an academic class before. And I always did really good in PE, but so I started to want that. And what I could see in tandem, what was happening, is that I'm going to school, I'm doing this program, and I'm working for stuff, and I don't get results right away. The results come after I keep doing this, after I keep taking the action. I learned right away that this was a program of action and that I just keep doing this. Right, right before I turned a year sober, my son's father had come back into our lives, and he, to this day, I consider to be kind of, we were just really close to each other, even though we were very separated. And he asked if he could take Jordan to the Yucatan, because he was going to go down there and train dolphins. And I was like, wow, that'd be really cool. You know, he'd get to know you. He'd get to know some of his culture and get to be in a really cool place. And part of me was totally still self-seeking. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just have one kid. I might start dating. And because I took the suggestion of not getting in a relationship for a year. It's not in our book. But I just wasn't. I mean, I couldn't even make a friend without wondering, you know, what that was about. So they left, and one morning, and I had happened to stay home from work because I think my son was sick, and got a call around noon that they had been in a car accident, and his father died in the accident, and Jordan ended up in the hospital down at Loma Linda. And so we drove down there, and I remember driving into the town and seeing the kind of bar I like to go to, which is the Dive Dark Pool Hall Bar, and just feeling this gratitude just wash over me that that's not where I was going to be spending my time, that I didn't need to be there, and I didn't want to be there, you know? I wanted to be there for my kid. And my cousin came and met us down there, and she'd been sober for a few years, several years, and she showed me what it looked like to suit up and show up and just be of service, to just be there. And we celebrated my first year of sobriety in the hospital room with my son, and it was really a nice time for us to reconnect, you know. And we can make, I don't know, one of the things I've learned in recovery is that any difficult situation which I walk through, I come out the other side stronger, a stronger woman with more experience, with something to share with someone else that comes along. And it was a really neat time because I suddenly felt myself present for my kid, you know, and I suddenly got it that this is where I'm supposed to be, you know. And this sounds ridiculous, but I was a big heavy metal freak in, I shouldn't say freak, but in high school, my nickname used to be Slara, and I'd never really gone to very many concerts, because that was one thing my parents said I couldn't do that I actually listened to. And so my brother had gotten tickets to see Metallica up in the Bay Area, and I was like, oh my God, I was so excited. I was so excited to go to this concert. And we had been at home from the hospital for a little bit, and he was still having some surgeries and stuff like that. And I lived in a recovery home for a few years. I was a resident, and then I was the house mother and with my kids. And I could have easily left him with the other women in the house, and that was my plan. But you know, this feeling just started coming over me, like, this is not the right thing to do. You should be here with your son. And it would be really easy for me to justify, because that's what I know how to do. I know how to justify my bad behavior or things that just really aren't the right thing to do. And I was really proud of myself. And the minute I made that decision, it was like this feeling of freedom came over me. This feeling of freedom and like I'm growing up, you know? And that was really awesome. When I was about 6 years sober, you know, I had both my kids. They have very different personalities, and I love them to death. And Jacob, my younger child, you know, the doctor said he was fine. I totally outed myself when I got sober, that what had been going on. And they're like, oh, he's fine. You know, I know that he was affected. I don't know how. I don't know how much of it was me. But I'm not stupid. And I had carried around a lot of guilt, and I was carrying around a lot of regret. And I remember reading in the promises, will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's going to apply to me. And I was sitting in a meeting one night. I'd been developing a relationship with power greater than myself over these years. And I'd suddenly, around this time, I'd also started to finally feel inside like a freedom and from anxiety and fear. It took me a while. I'm like one of those sometimes slowly people. And so I'm sitting in the meeting, and stuff had gone on with my kids too, where, you know, I noticed I have some rage, and I would parent my kids with fear and barking and, what are you doing? And why do you look like that? Or, you know, got to do this or whatever. And I would stop myself and say stuff like, whoa, you know, I don't know why I'm using that tone. Or, you know, I'm sorry, it's wrong of me to be talking to you like that. And, but I just realized one night that in order for me to be making that amends, and I just came to peace with my relationship with him and what I had done, my relationship really with myself and my higher power, is that, you know, my job is to be of service, to be of maximum service to my God and to my fellows. And that's what I've learned here. And that in order to be there, to be doing that, I need to be present. You know, I need to be there for him. And if I'm worried about what's going to happen to him, in anybody, or what happened, what I think happened, I'm not being of service. And I truly believe that that everything happens for a reason. You know, that for some reason I was born an alcoholic. For some reason he was born into a family, you know, with his mother's an alcoholic. I don't know why. I don't know why stuff happens. And I've learned here I can't question it too much. Not to say I don't. But it doesn't work for me to question why things happen the way they do. It'll drive me crazy. So that was really a kind of turning point. Mind you, at this time was the first time, which I'm not proud of, that I actually got together with a group of people that were studying this book, not just reading here and there. You know, I'd read the whole first 164 pages, but never from page to page, and never studied it. I don't think I knew how to study, so I'd learned in school. I was at UCSB at this point, which I hadn't planned on doing that. And a bunch of kids asked me if I wanted to come to this book study that they were having on every Friday night. I had the most sobriety in the room, but I was probably the dumbest there as far as as far as like really applying the principles of this program to my life. And I really learned the recipe there. And I obviously had, you know, had some of it, but it just really all came together. You know, I was finally in the oven baking, and my recovery really took off. And I had sponsored a few women before then. I had never sought out sponsees, but women started coming up to me and asking me to sponsor them. And it was because something inside of me had shifted, you know. And it was really, when I came in here, I didn't know that the purpose of the steps was to develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. I had no idea. And, you know, it's through, especially the steps up to 9 are where there's just all that house cleaning going on, and the amends process is really powerful. You know, those promises come, you know, where we've looked at ourselves, you know, and I remember finding that the fifth step and the fourth column to be really freeing, because I suddenly realized that it's not you, it's me, and I can change me. You know, I can't change you. That's a lesson I'm still learning, or that I forget, I guess, quite frequently, because I suddenly find myself trying to play God. I would say daily, you know, little snippets here and there. And it's never a comfortable role. It's too much responsibility. And, you know, but, you know, I've learned here also what the word, you know, humility means, and how to practice being humble. And, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to come up here and share some things because I feel braggy or something, but, or embarrassed, but it's really easy for me to share embarrassing stuff. easier than it is for me to share accomplishments. One of the things that this program allowed me to do was to graduate from UCSB, and not just to graduate, but to graduate at the top of my class. And I almost dropped out my first quarter there because I didn't think I could do it. I really didn't think I could do it. I thought I was going to fail. And I didn't think I had what, I don't know, these other people have. And I got an email right before graduation saying that that I was graduating magna cum laude. And I was like, I had to look it up. What? I knew that the magna or cum or laude or something, I knew that that was pretty cool, but I didn't know exactly what rank I was. And I got to find out. But And I went on to graduate school, and it wasn't until graduate school that I actually could show up to class and not be afraid, like when the syllabus came, and I was like, oh my God, I can't do all this. You know, that was how I dealt with things, was just, I just get overwhelmed. I can't juggle all this, and my kids had all kinds of basketball and soccer and this and that, and I never had any money, and one year a Christmas tree showed up on my front door, and another year a bunch of gift cards came that were Secret Santa. For to go get a tree, to go buy them this with some greeting cards to send to people. And, you know, that's how my higher power shows up in my life today. And when I was about, so I had made a really conscious decision to stay out of a relationship till God told me it was okay. And it was like 7 years. I tried it out a couple times, and it was really apparent to me, like, you know, getting dropped off at the recovery home was just a little awkward. And so I'm 7.5 years sober, and I go to the Saturday night Grace Lutheran speaker meeting, and this guy that I think's cute was up there, and he was taking his 3-year cake, and we had met each other on the break, and he asked me out a little bit later via Facebook, and I remember thinking, like, there is no way this is going to work, you know? I'm in school, I'm at the end of my my UCSB time, I've got my 2 kids, and he's living in Lompoc, and he's got 4 kids. And I was like, there's no way, you know? And my friend, one of the guys in the book study I had been going to, said, you know, so-and-so and I met, and we didn't think whatever, and look at us, you know? I was like, yeah, you know, I'll give it a try. And it really did feel like, you know, the clouds were kind of parting or whatever. And I fell in love, and it was the only quarter that I got a couple of B's, and because I was just totally goofy. And you know, the funny thing is he had broken up with me when I was I think we'd been dating about 9 months. I had no idea it was coming, and man, heartbreak sucks. Sober. I mean, it sucks. Period. But I remember, I could feel it even from the day it started as like a blessing in my life, because I was gonna walk through it, not around it. I wanted to go hurt things, hurt people, yell. And I was like, man, I just don't. I mean, obviously I could do those things. I could go out and drink, but I don't do those things anymore. So I just gotta sit in this. And I sat, laid, you know, in the fetal position on the floor in pain. And I knew I was going to be able to share this with somebody someday. We get to walk through things, and we do recover. You know, we do get better. So anyway, we got back together after a week, but and we got married 4 years later. And it was a beautiful ceremony. And it's been tough. It's been really tough. You know, we've got the blended family going. And we kind of didn't think we thought his kids were going to be living with her mom, their mom, and that didn't work out. And so we hadn't planned to have everybody in the same house. And I joke with him sometimes that, like, you know how they talk about painting the green light or painting the red lights green? And in the program, like, you know, there's kind of like a stop sign, but you just go, oh, yeah, no, this is fine. This is God's will. And, and I'm like, I kind of, I guess the metaphor I made up was like that, you know how when you go past the red light and, but you don't really know that you ran it, but like a few minutes later, you're like, did I just run a red light? And that's kind of how I think that occasionally we might make decisions based on self. And that's part of my nature. And part of what I've learned here is to try to let go of that and to live in the present and to be of service to my family, to my husband. You know, it's not about suiting up and showing up to get what I want. It's about how can I be of service to you. And that sounds kind of old school, but it works. Anyway, just to wrap it up, my husband shared a little bit when he spoke here. I had breast cancer about a year and a half ago, and that was a trip to walk through, you know, sober. And I did take pain medication, and I took it as directed, and sometimes I really liked it. And I didn't have to chase it even when I wanted to. You know, I was accountable to my sponsor, to my family, and I got to walk through that. And I'm really, really grateful today to know I can walk through really anything. And it's been hard lately because both a couple of our kids that are at home with us are just having trouble, you know, and it breaks my heart. But again, and I get in the fear and I get scared and I want them to change. You know, I just want them to see, just do this, please. And they don't. And so I get to constantly put myself back in the place, well, you know, what my role is here. And I sponsor women. I go to meetings. I've had commitments since I got sober. I've had a sponsor since I've got sober. And I work with other women. And in that, I find that the gift that comes back is much bigger than anything I could ever give. Thank you for asking me to come to speak tonight. And thank you all for being here.
Thank you again, Sarah, for coming.